Last time, on Tales of the Ironlands, Kalyra and Ainari left Palinham and headed for Aidenholt, where Kalyra intends to try speaking with the spirit of Halfdan Groesen. Along the way, they stopped in the town of Orvindal, where they were questioned by a priestess of Lachlis the Sage before being admitted. She granted them permission to enter only if they agreed to deliver a message to her colleague Thorvaldr in Aidenholt. They agreed. In the morning, the suspicious villagers of Orvindal refused to sell Kalyra any supplies, but at the same time must have been watching her closely, for once she left the town, positively buzzed. Kalyra's strange eyes and choice of traveling companion inspired endless gossip. Shortly before reaching Aidenholt, Kalyra and Ainari were waylaid by four bandits who demanded all of their worldly possessions as a toll. Kalyra declined this demand and promptly trounced them. One of the bandits was killed. The others fled in varying states of health. Ainari was wounded in the fight, forcing them to camp immediately rather than proceed to Aidenholt. Fortunately, his wound was not severe, and given some careful tending and a night's rest, he was able to move on the next day. When they came to Aidenholt, the guards promptly arrested them for banditry and escorted them to the Jarl's court to answer these charges. There, before the Jarl could even speak, one of his thanes rose and accused Kalyra and Ainari of banditry, and that man was himself one of the bandits who had assaulted them. And that is where we're going to pick up. Kalyra blurts out, "That wasn't us. That was you. You tried to rob us." Whereupon she is greeted by a roar from the assembled retainers of the Jarl. Everyone is talking, asking questions, shouting insults, and generally raising a fuss. Until the Jarl, a man with thin graying hair held back by a golden circlet, stands abruptly from his chair at the head table in the room and raises a hand for silence. It spreads across the room. Once everyone has fallen quiet, he says, "We will have order here. Bregi, you have already made your accusation. We will have the details out of you momentarily. As for you," and he looks at Kalyra and Ainari, "name yourselves. Who are you and what has brought you to this place?" Kalyra steps forward and says, "I am Kalyra Sophie's daughter. I have come to Aidenholt on a number of different errands. I need to deliver a message to Thorvaldr, the priest of Lachlis the Sage. I intend to lay flowers on the niche of my grandparents."
"Your grandparents are buried here," says the Jarl.
"Yes. My mother, Sophie Enya's daughter, was born and raised here, and moved away only when she became an adult." There is a brief stir. The woman from the head table, who was seated to the Jarl's right, gives a slight start at the name Sophie Enya's daughter, and glances upward towards the Jarl standing beside her. He seems to take no notice of this.
"Sophie Enya's daughter. This is a name that is known to us. And you are her daughter?"
"I am."
"You look nothing like her," says the Jarl, after a long pause.
"I'm told I take after my father. I got the red hair from him. My mother trained me as a herbalist. She, I believe, learned at the knee of Halfdan Groesen here in Aidenholt." There's another brief stirring as people recognize the name Halfdan Groesen. The Jarl nods reluctantly.
"Very well. Regardless, I would also like to know who you are," and he points at Ainari. "And why are you wearing that mask?"
"Greetings, Lord," says Ainari. My name is Ainari. I am an elf, formerly of the Skaren tribe of elves from the deep wilds. And as for why I'm wearing a mask, why, my lord, that is simply the manner of our people. All of us wear masks once we come of age.
Hmph,
says the Jarl. He looks over to one side and raises an eyebrow towards an older gentleman, perhaps even older than the Jarl, who gives him a nod back. I see. So it is not merely that you wish to hide your face from us for fear of being recognized as someone you are not?
No, says Ainari. There's only one person this side of the Deep Wilds who has seen my face, and that is my friend Kalira here, mostly because she broke my nose.
There's a brief rustle and some slight laughter. Kalira colors slightly. The Jarl raises an eyebrow.
Broke your nose, and yet you call her friend?
She wasn't really herself at the time. It's a long story.
My lord, says Bregi.
All right, Bregi, says the Jarl. Tell your story.
Thank you, my lord.
Yesterday, I went hunting in the woods with three of my companions. There, as we were hunting, we were confronted by this woman and her masked friend, the elf. They demanded that we give them our money, our weapons, and our clothing. When we refused, they fell upon us and fought us. My friend Yarrick was killed in the fight. We were forced to flee. They didn't get our stuff. But, my lord, I demand punishment for these criminals.
We shall see, says the Jarl. Now you, he says, indicating Kalira, what is your version of these events?
Oh, my version is very similar, says Kalira, save that it was Bregi, if that is indeed your name, and his three friends who assaulted us. We were traveling on our way to Aidenholt. They confronted us on the road, told us that there was a toll, when we asked what the toll was, they demanded all of our worldly possessions. When we refused, they moved to attack us, no doubt thinking we would be easy pickings. And in that, they were sadly mistaken. It is true, one of them I killed. The other three I damaged in varying degrees. One man knocked unconscious, one man with a broken nose, and our dear friend Bregi here, merely stunned.
And what did you do with Yarrick?
The dead one, Kalira says?
Yes.
Well, once I had finished treating the wound that my friend Ainari suffered in the course of the fight, and she indicates his bound and bandaged leg, I went through his belongings and took a few coins, two apples, and the four spears that I made them leave behind as just recompense for having assaulted us.
Lies, says Bregi.
And how am I to determine which of you two is telling the truth, says the Jarl.
My lord, how can you even consider that she might be telling the truth, says Bregi. I, your loyal retainer, am well known for my honesty and forthrightness. And at that, a man on the other side of the hallway lets out a loud laugh.
Do you have something to say, Bard? Says the Jarl.
Only, my lord, that the only one who touts Bregi's honesty is Bregi himself.
He is well known to be a braggart and a bully.
Hmph, says the Jarl. the long history between you two is not unknown to me. For now, you are not a part of this conflict. Be silent.
Yes, my lord, says Bard, and settles down once again.
Bragi, says the Jarl.
Yes, my lord.
It seems strange to me that you think two people, an elf and this woman, would assault four men with boar spears. Surely the odds were in your favor in this fight. How is it that if they assaulted you, you did not trounce them?
The woman is a fierce fighter, my lord, says Bragi. Indeed, she may even be said to be devilishly accomplished. Look at her eyes, my lord. Do those look like the eyes of an honest woman?
The Jarl turns his gaze to Kalyra, who shuffles a little uncomfortably, but meets his gaze.
You do have most peculiar eyes, young woman, says the Jarl. What accounts for their strange appearance?
My lord, I am what they call death-touched.
Death-touched, he says. And what does that mean?
It means that not long past, I died in combat. I visited the Black Door. I was on the verge of passing through it. And then the Black Lady spoke to me and offered me a bargain. She let me return, resume my life in exchange for a pledge of service to her.
There is much rustling and muttering amongst the crowd at this.
And what did you agree to do for her? Says the Jarl.
I do not see that it is relevant, says Kalyra. Yet I have nothing to hide. She demanded that I pluck a flower for her, one which grows in the shattered wastes far beyond the veiled mountains.
If your task is to go to the shattered wastes, says the Jarl, what are you doing here?
I'm seeking information which will help me to get to there. It's a big task. It may be quite some time before I am ready to embark upon the journey proper, Kalyra says tiredly.
Lies, says Bragi. Look at her spinning and twisting words.
You are such a foul-mouthed creature, says Kalyra. I demand satisfaction.
There is much rustling and muttering against this, but the Jarl holds up his hand and it dies away again, he says.
That seems as good a way to resolve this as another. Bragi, as you are the one who has been challenged, choice of weapon goes to you.
Bragi smiles and cracks his knuckles. Sword, my lord.
Kalyra laughs a little inwardly. The Jarl turns to her and says,
do you have a sword?
I do not, my lord. Is there one I may borrow?
Mine, says Bard, the man from across the room. He withdraws a well-made blade from his from a scabbard at his side and leans forward over the table, resting the blade on his forearm with the handle outwards.
With your permission, my lord, says Kalyra, and the Jarl nods.
Kalyra walks over to the left side of the banquet hall and accepts the blade from Bard.
Give him what for. Watch out. He favors the right.
Hush, bard. This is not your fight, says the Jarl. Clear a space.
And from the wings come forth the house servants who pull the tables and benches backwards a little way to free up more space in the center of the hall. Kalyra takes the sword and examines it. It seems well made. The metal ripples with the twisting patterns of highly forged iron. She tests the balance, perhaps a little heavier than she's used to, but nothing that she can't adapt to. Bragi comes forth from his side of the table, calling for his sword as he does, and one of the house servant comes running and hands it to him. He draws it from his scabbard. Says Bragi. The two combatants face one another. The hall goes quiet. And we are going to, let's not enter the fray, we're going to draw the circle. So now I need to look up how that works. Okay, so it appears that I need to roll a plus heart. I do not get I'm not bonded to this community, so I have no additional bonuses. So rolling at plus three. Oh dear. I have a total of four versus a five and a six, the one on the action die. My momentum is at one, so that does me no good. What is amiss here? Bragi has initiative, and I have to pay the price. So, we are going into combat. When we were out in the forest, Bragi was a troublesome combatant when he was fighting in tandem with another bandit. I think he's tougher than that now. He's had an opportunity to get her measure, and he's fighting with a sword, which is a weapon he favors more than the spear. So I think we're going to mark him as a dangerous opponent. Okay, so Bragi and Kalyra face off against one another. The heat of the fire in the central pit roasts their sides. The Jarl stands at his table on the opposite side of the fire from them, and there is sufficient room that they can maneuver without getting too close to the fire. The two of them take their swords and study one another. Kalyra feels a little nervous. She's never fought in front of a crowd of people before, and perhaps Bragi notices that, because all of a sudden he is in motion, and we are going to clash, because she has no initiative and he would go for her. So, rolling plus iron. I have a six. Four plus two is six, versus a two and a seven for a weak hit. The two combatants clash. Bragi lunges forward, and Kalyra is almost unable to parry in time. In fact, she isn't able to parry because he has faked her out. It looked as though he was coming in from the left with a long stroke, but at the last moment he reverses, flips the blade under, and stabs at her shoulder with it. And she's going to suffer two health damage and endure harm. At the same time, however, she brings her sword up and jabs it into his leg. The two of them separate, bleeding, each of them from heavy wounds, and circle one another,
The hall has gone quiet now as everyone strains to see exactly what is going on. I have a weak hit with a 7 versus a 7 and a 2 on the endure harm as she presses on. She has lost initiative.
I see you're better with a sword than a spear, says Kalyra.
Shut up, says Bragi. He's going to go for her again, but this time she is going to, I'm going to use face danger to try and dodge out of the way. That would be plus edge. So here comes the roll. Edge is plus 1. Okay, I have a 3 versus a 2 and a 10. That is a weak hit. She tries to dodge out of the way, but it does not work. He's too quick for her. She manages to bring her blade up and push his aside, but she's not able to get into an advantageous position. Suffering minus 1 momentum, down to 0. Heh. The two of them go back to circling one another. For a moment, she still does not have the initiative. I think she's going to try to secure an advantage by angering him. This would be a compel, I think. And it's secure an advantage, but it's going to be take the form of kind of like a compel. All right. Kalyra says,
I see you're better when you work alone. Does that come from practice in the long nights?
And she's going to try to secure an advantage using, what would that be, heart? Wits? Let's go with wits. She's mocking him. Oh, that's gonna be no good. Nat 1 on the the action die for a total of 3 versus a 6 and a 10. Says Bragi. Maybe later I can show you how good I am in the night. Then they're going to clash, because it seems logical. So here comes the clash. Aha. Kalyra has a 6 versus double ones. So he gets overconfident. Bragi moves in to strike at this foolish woman, and she dodges out of the way, spins around, and brings the flat of her blade down on his wrist, cracking it and sending his sword flying. It skitters under the table, fetches up against the feet of the other diners, the other retainers of the Jarl. And that's a strong hit with a twist. The twist is that he lost his sword, and for the strong hit, she gets initiative. I'm going to choose plus 1 harm instead of plus 1 momentum, because that would be 3 harm. She's already dealt 2 harm for a total of 4 progress, and the 3 more harm would be 6 progress, getting us to 10 progress. As Bragi turns around, having lost his sword and clutching his broken wrist, she brings the sword up to his throat and says, "Yield, braggart." "The name's Bragi," he says. And we're going to move to end the fight, coming off that strong hit from the clash. Oh, it is a progress roll, and I've got 10 progress. I've got 8 and 6, so that is a strong hit on end the fight. However, after a moment, he drops his eyes and nods. "Yeah!" says Bard from the far side.
The crowd breaks into all sorts of excited chatter and discussion of the fight. The Jarl lets it go on for a few moments until it starts to settle a little bit, and finally he holds up his hand again, and quiet falls, and he says, "The trial is concluded. Kalyra, Sophie's daughter, has demonstrated that the charges against her were false. Bregi, for bearing false witness, you are exiled from my court for a period of 3 months. Think you well on what you have said and done here. At the end of the exile, you may appear before me and humbly ask my forgiveness for having trespassed against the laws of my land." "Yes, my lord," says Bregi, clutching his broken wrist and shooting a look full of venom at Kalyra. But he shuffles out. One of the other retainers has picked up the sword that Bregi dropped and begins to offer it to him, and the Jarl says, "No. The sword belongs to the woman Kalyra, Sophie's daughter, by right of conquest. Give it to her, and the scabbard." Bregi bares his teeth in a snarl of hatred, and then he exits the hall forthwith. Kalyra nods her thanks. "My thanks to you, my lord. Now, if we are done with this disturbance..." "I believe we were not yet concluded with dinner," says the Jarl, taking a seat once again. "As for you, Kalyra, Sophie's daughter, you and your friend are free to go. Collect your sword, return bards, and you may go." "Thank you, my lord," says Kalyra. She returns Bard's sword to him, and he takes it and says, "That did my heart good." "Meet me later, tomorrow, and I would like to talk with you some more at that time." "Where shall we meet?" she says. "My house is," and he gives her directions to his house, which is located off of a little side path, just about halfway up the hill that leads to the Jarl's palisade. Kalyra, in possession of a sword once again, buckles it around herself and sort of clutches at her shoulder, which is very painfully wounded. "Come on, Inari, let's go. We need to find someplace to stay for the evening." And the two of them depart the Jarl's household. Orders have evidently been passed through to the guards, who let them go and return the spears that they had confiscated earlier. Inari hands in the stave that he had borrowed and takes his spear back. "Well, that was exciting," he says. "That's not how I envisioned arriving at Aidenholt," Kalyra says. "Do you know where we could go find lodging?" Asks Inari.
"No idea," she says. "Maybe I should have asked that bard fellow if he could put us up for the night. He seemed pretty happy with us. Oh, well, too late now. And I'm going to have to ask the Oracle to figure out some place for them to stay. I think the options are finding somebody's barn and sleeping in it, camping someplace just outside of the walls, or finding a public house like the one they stayed at in Orvindal. And I think that out of these options, the public house is pretty likely, considering it's a fairly large town. But
If that falls through, there's always the barn or the fields outside. If I roll a 50+, then there's a pub. If I roll 24 or lower, it's the fields. Anything between those two, they find a barn. 83. There's a pub.
Hey, Kalyra says to one of the guards as they're giving the spears back. We need some place to stay for the night. Is there some place that could put us up?
She says, yeah, sure. Down towards the bottom of the hill. It's, they call it the World's End.
Really? Why is that?
Damned if I know, says the guard.
All right. Thank you, Kalyra says. And the two of them wearily walk back down the hill to a pub, which they discover is called the World's End, as the guard promised. It has a sign outside which depicts a map of the Ironlands, only it has been torn in half, and it looks like the rivers are cascading off into nothingness. That must be it. The World's End pub. Come on, let's go inside.
Ow, she says, holding her shoulder.
Inside, they find a well-appointed... This is not just a pub or a public house, but is in fact a proper inn. There is a cheerful, rather overweight a woman with dark blonde hair behind the bar, busily polishing a mug of lacquered clay.
Welcome to the World's End, she says. Come on in. What can I do for you?
Oh, you're hurt. How did that happen?
It's a long story, Clara says. I'm sure you'll hear all about it in short order.
Oh, you can't go and leave me hanging like that, my dear, says the barkeep. Come on, tell me.
I was accused of banditry, falsely, I might add, and wound up fighting a duel against the man who accused me, in front of the Jarl.
Ooh! Says the barkeep. That's juicy! Who was it? Who was it that accused you?
Kylyra sort of says, presses her lips together. I don't like... I don't like bearing witness against people.
Not even people who accuse you of banditry, love? Says the barkeep.
Fine. It was Bragi. I don't know his full name. It's just Bragi.
Oh, says the
barkeep, who is an inveterate gossip, it seems.
Well, now, and how did the fight go?
Kalyra says, well, he got me one good hit in the shoulder, and then I broke his wrist for him and took his sword away. She pats the sword on the side of her hip.
Ooh, so much. Ooh. I'll bet Bragi is just stewing, says the barkeep.
Yes, he seemed pretty angry when I left. Is he going to give me trouble later? Says Kalyra. Huh. The barkeep gets a little more serious, and she says,
I wouldn't put it past him, honestly. Probably not within the bounds of the city. What did the Jarl say? What did Jarl Tryggvason say?
Bragi's been exiled for 3 months, says Kalyra, after which he's allowed to come back and beg for the Jarl's forgiveness.
Ooh, you should be careful when you leave, dear, says the barkeep. That Bragi's a nasty piece of work. A bully and a braggart. Always has been.
Thanks. Yeah, I got that, says Kalyra. Listen,
We need some place to stay for the night. Can you put us up? Are there any pallets in the common room, maybe? Oh, of course, my dear, says the barkeep. I'm Tordis, by the way. Welcome to Aidenhold. And the two of them negotiate a price, which is covered by the coins that she took from Yarrick's pouch. After a meal, there is in fact some stew on the pot. Not so much stew as a hearty soup, a sort of perpetual soup. One of those soups where the pot just lives permanently on the stove, and they keep adding more ingredients and more liquid to it so that it just is always there and ready. It's thick, it's hot, and it hits the spot. After that, Kalaira and Inari retreat to their pallets in the common room, which seems to be mostly empty this evening. And Kalaira sets about tending her wounds. Here comes a heal check. With a plus two from Herbalist, that would be 4 plus 2 plus 2 is 8. This is an 8 and a 6. So she regains 2 health. It was a weak hit. Yep. Minus 1 supply. Ah, it feels better, she says, having bandaged her shoulder. Let me take a look at your leg, Inari, she says. All right. And she's going to try a heal check to tend him as well. Again, with plus 2 from Herbalist. 3 plus 2 plus 2 is 7. Versus a 7 and a 9. So she has missed. I don't think there's anything more I can do for it, she says, after having examined it. It's healing up all right. Another couple of days and you'll be just fine. That's pretty much what I figured, he said. I'm exhausted, Kalaira says. I'm going to bed. I'm going to go out and talk with that barkeep, says Inari, and anyone else who happens to be here. So many interesting people to see and meet. And so that's what they do. In the morning, Kalaira wakes, feeling stiff and sore. She opens her gummy eyes and rolls over to discover that Inari must have come back from the common room at some point last night as he's occupying the next pallet over and snoring. She rolls back onto her back and stares up at the beams of the ceiling. They have been painted with elaborate geometric designs all along the sides. It's quite pretty, actually. She stares at the ceiling for a while, just wonders, how did I come here? Why am I doing all this? All because of that stupid boar, she says aloud. Nobody seems to notice. Nothing for it but to press forward, she whispers to herself. And I'm going to reset my momentum to plus 1. I'm still not entirely clear if doing that is a move of some sort, but I figure just taking a moment to
rest is probably sufficient. After she has rested her for a while, she gets up and gets dressed. Inari is still asleep when Kalaira wanders out into the public areas of the inn. This early in the morning, it is basically empty of customers, but she can smell breakfast cooking. Oh, there you are, love, says the barkeep, Tortoise. Would you like some porridge with honey in it? Yes, I'd like that a lot, says Kalaira. And so she has breakfast, some sweetened porridge. Now, I imagine that fighting a duel with Bregi wasn't what brought you here. And what strange eyes you have, my dear. Won't you tell me about them?
Oh, says Kalaira and sort of flops backwards in her chair. I am so tired of telling people about this stupid... It's just a thing, all right?
Ooh, no need to snap at me, my dear, says Tortoise. If you don't want to tell me, you don't have to.
But she's clearly been offended.
I'm sorry, Kalaira says. I'm not used to it yet.
But she doesn't offer to tell the woman about her bargain.
It's all right, love. I imagine with her eyes like that, you get that sort of question quite a lot.
I do now, she says.
Well, aside from that, what brought you to Aidenholt? I'm sure you didn't come just to have fight a duel with Bregi.
No, says Kalaira. I have a couple of tasks here, actually. One is I need to deliver a message to a priest of Lachlis named Thorvaldur.
Oh, Thorvaldur. Yes, you can find his house halfway up the hill on the right, second close past the maple, says Tortoise. Look for the little cottage with the three chickens clucking in the fenced-in yard.
Three chickens, fenced-in yard. Got it. Thanks, says Kalaira.
And what else? You said you had other errands.
Well, my mother asked me to lay some flowers in my grandparents' niche in the catacombs, says Kalaira.
Oh, so your mother's from here, is she? Says Tortoise. Who was that? Who's she then?
Sophie Enya's daughter, says Kalaira. She grew up here. Left when she became a young woman.
Why'd she leave?
I don't know, says Kalaira, actually. I'm not sure she's ever told me why she left Aidenholt. Anyway, I was coming here, so she asked if I could lay some flowers in their niche.
Well, the catacombs are a ways outside of town, love, says the barkeep.
On the southeast side, it's about a 15-minute walk outside of the bounds of the palisade. Mother said there would be a priestess there who tends it.
Oh, aye, says Tortoise. Yes, there's an acolyte of Mirshanu who watches the catacombs.
And Kalaira nods. Where can I find this acolyte?
Oh, she stays out there,
says Tortoise.
Has a little house out by the entryway.
Easy enough to find. And she gives directions to the catacombs to Kalaira.
Round about this time, Inari stumbles into the common room of the inn, rubbing sleep from his eyes.
Good morning, he says.
Good morning, Inari, says Kalira. Care to join me for breakfast?
Ooh, yes, he says.
How do you eat with that mask on, says Tortoise.
Oh, he says, well, and he demonstrates. He just sort of pushes it just a little way up on his forehead to free up his mouth a little bit so that he can spoon things into it. Kalira, of course, is already familiar with this procedure, having spent some time in an elven village.
And why are you wearing a mask in the first place?
Inquisitive, aren't you? Says Inari, around a mouthful of porridge.
Oh, well, it passes the time, says Tortoise.
Kalira takes pity on Inari, who clearly just wants to eat his porridge, and says,
Inari comes from a clan of elves in the deep wild, and it is the custom of their people that grown-ups among them wear masks. They only show their faces to family and lovers. Children don't wear masks, though, she adds.
Ooh.
And have you been to there? Have you seen them? Says Tortoise.
Yes, says Kalira. I was there for a few days.
Says Tortoise, and is quite just launches into a torrent of questions about how elves live. Kalira starts feeling quite desperate to get away from this exceptionally curious woman.
She answers as best she can and satisfies Tortoise's curiosity insofar as it is possible to satisfy an endless thirst, and finally says, after she notices that Inari has finished his porridge, We have things to do, Tortoise. Thank you very much for the food and lodging. I'm not sure how long we'll be here, but it's likely to be at least one more night, depending on how long these things take.
All right then, love, says Tortoise. Go on, be about your business.
And she takes their two empty bowls and clears them away, bustling towards the kitchen cheerfully. Clearly she is in an excellent mood for having gotten some really interesting gossip from out of town, and also in town.
Well, says Inari as they emerge from the World's End pub, what first?
Says Kalira. Well, we have to deliver a message to Thorvaldr. That fellow bard who lent me the sword last night asked to see me at his place, and I need to go to the catacombs. Let's start with Thorvaldr. It seems like the easiest thing. Tortoise gave me directions. This way. The two of them make their way uphill towards the center of town. And at the second right after the large maple tree, Kalira takes a right and makes her way down the close that's there. It's a narrow path. Off to one side, she discovers a small wattle and daub cottage, much like the one that she grew up in, with a small fenced-in yard where three chickens are pecking and scratching in the dirt. That's the place, she says. She approaches the door and knocks on it. There's a muttering and sort of rumbling from inside. One moment! And, they stand there waiting awkwardly for a few more moments. Finally, the door opens and reveals the older man that the Jarl had looked at yesterday evening. Ah!
I thought you might be showing up, he says. You said you had a message for me.
Oh, yes, I do, says Kalyra. And she rummages around in her pack and extracts the scroll that Sigrun had given her, still bound, still sealed with black wax, and she hands it to him.
There you are. Thank you. And then she turns to go.
Oh, one moment, says Thorvaldr. Let me get you something for your trouble.
Pauses for a moment. He goes back inside, and they hear a series of clatters and rattles and him muttering to himself, "Where did I put that?" So nope, not there. Hold on. And a moment later, he emerges, clutching a small pouch, and pulls out a silver coin, which he presents to her.
Oh, well, thanks.
Goodbye, says Kalyra, and Thorvaldr says, thank you for carrying the message. And then he closes the door, and they go on their way.
I kind of wonder what was in that message,
Inari says. Kalyra says, I don't. We have enough entanglements as it is.
Where now? Says Inari. This bard fellow, or off to the catacombs?
Well, we're in town. Also, I kind of wonder if Bragi might be waiting for us to leave the town, she says. So let's go talk with Bard first. Making their way to the place Bard had described to her the previous evening in the Jarl's Hall, she finds a much larger and more sophisticated dwelling. It has a porch. The beams are made of yellowed pine, which has been sealed with a yellowy lacquer. It's got some rather nice carvings above the door. She knocks on it, and a young blonde woman with rosy red cheeks, who is in the advanced stages of pregnancy, opens the door and says,
"Yes, may I help you?"
"Good morning, madam," says Kalyra. "My name is Kalyra Sophie's daughter. Is Bard around? He wanted to speak with me." And the woman's face just sort of goes quiet and closed for a moment, and she looks at Kalyra guardedly and says,
"What about?"
"I don't know. He lent me his sword so I could fight that Bragi guy last night."
"You fought Bragi last night?" says the woman.
"Yes," says Kalyra, "and won." She pats Bragi's sword there on her hip.
"Well, that's probably why he wants to talk to you, then. The two have hated each other since they were children.
Come on in." And she brings Kalyra and Inari into their house and sets them at a table, which is just inside. "One moment, he's still abed." She climbs up a set of stairs so steep that they might actually be a ladder, to a loft up above, and the two of them can hear down from up there. The young woman shaking Bard awake. They politely study their fingernails and look out the window until Bard comes down.
"Ah, you're up and about early," he says.
"Well, I've things to do," says Kalyra.
"I just wanted to thank you for finally putting that ass Bragi in his place."
"I take it you two don't like one another very much?"
"Oh, can't stand the man. Just has been a braggart and a bully since we were children. Hate him."
"Do you think I'm going to need to watch my back when I leave here?" Kalyra says cautiously.
and without even a moment's hesitation, he says, "Yes, Bregi is not one to take an insult like that lying down. That said, it looked to me as though you broke his wrist pretty thoroughly, and that'll be a while healing, so you may have a grace period."
"Wonderful," says Kalyra. I guess I should finish my business quickly and go wherever I have to next."
"Seems a strange sort of task you're on," says Bard thoughtfully.
"Well, yes, I suppose," says Kalyra.
"Have you delivered your message to Thorvaldr? I can give you directions to his house."
"Yes, we just came from there," says Kalyra.
"You don't waste any time at all, do you?" "Well, thank you again for the wonderful experience of seeing Bregi bested. You handled that sword quite well."
"Yes, my father taught me sword work. I didn't have one when I came, but it worked out well."
"I think he must have expected me not to know how to use one."
"Clearly," says Bard.
"Well, listen, it was worth its weight in gold to see that happen, and I would like to reward you for it. So, here," and he pulls out of the pocket of his jerkin a gold coin, which he hands to her.
"Oh, there's really no need," she says.
"I insist. It was worth it, completely."
"Well, thank you very much," says Kalyra.
"All right, we have things to do. Thank you for the loan of your sword last night," she says.
"Any time," he says.
And the two of them make their farewells.
"That seemed like a nice fellow," says Ainari as they walk out again. He's still favoring his leg slightly, but it's recovering well.
"Well, I suppose the next stop is the catacombs," says Kalyra. Following the instructions that Tordis gave them, the two of them make their way to the southeast of the village, find a path marked with a standing stone.
"It's like the Cromlech stones," says Ainari, looking at it. "Only no carvings."
Kalyra looks at the stone, which is a roughly rectangular standing stone marking the beginning of the path, and she reaches out and touches it, shakes her head, and says, "It's just a rock. The Cromlech stones sing when you touch them. This one's empty." The two of them follow the path outside, and I am going to ask the Oracle, are they going to get ambushed by Bregi and his allies right now or later? I think right now is less likely, so we're going to say 25 or lower means now, and anything higher than that means later. 77, later. They are alert as they pass along the path, but soon find their way to a small clearing in the forested areas of this this land at the base of the hill that leads up to Aidenholt. It lies directly between a long, narrow lake and the base of the hill, and there's a small cottage there. Kalyra walks up to the door of the cottage and knocks on it. After a moment, the door creaks open, and a rather old woman, all dressed in black, stands there.
"May I help you?" she says.
"Yes, I hope so. My name is Kalyra, Sophie's daughter, and..."
"You are death-touched," says the woman.
"Yes. Yes, I am," says Kalyra.
"Please, come in," says the woman.
"I am Dagny Olga's daughter, the caretaker of this catacomb. Enter, honored one." Slightly creeped out, Kalyra steps into the house.
"How may I assist you?"
says the woman, Dagny. "Well, I have two tasks," says Kalyra. "The first, my mother, Sophie Enya's daughter, has asked me to lay a flower in the niche where her two parents are buried."
"I see," says Dagny. "I can show you this."
"Good," says Kalyra.
"And the other task," says the woman, Dagny.
"I need to speak with the spirit of Halfdan Groason, dead these 30 years. He can answer a question that I need answered."
"Ah, that is more difficult," says Dagny.
"I have spoken with the dead before."
"Have you?" says Dagny.
"Yes, I spoke with an elven spirit in an abandoned village, and before that, with the spirits of three elves that I slew in combat, and before that, briefly, with the spirit of an elf who rose as a hollow."
"Ah, well, I think you may find that so far you have only spoken to spirits who have come back of their own accord. Halfdan Groason, I believe, is long past the Black Door. Speaking to him will not be nearly so easy."
Says Kalyra.
"Can it be done?"
"Oh, yes," says Dagny. "I can show you how to do this thing. But it will take time. And there is something I wish you to do in exchange."
"Of course," says Kalyra.
Inwardly, she's thinking, "Of course!"
"What is it you need?"
And I think we're just going to roll on the theme table here, possibly action, if that doesn't bring something instantly to mind. All right, here comes the theme. 55. Disease. Interesting. And I think that gives me a good idea. Dagny says,
"There are certain herbs that I need gathered. They help me with a disease that I have suffered for many years, alleviating its symptoms a little. However, these days I cannot easily get away to harvest them. Bring me a supply of these, and we can begin your training, which may take some time."
Oh.
Well, as it happens, I am a somewhat accomplished herbalist, says Kalira. Harvesting herbs and plants is something I'm well familiar with. What sort of plant do you need?
I do not think you have encountered this sort of plant before, says Dagny.
Oh? Well, what is it?
The herb that I need grows in the center of a glade south of here. It is a blossom, purple, rimmed with black around the edges, and the brightest yellow pollen in the center. It's called Knight's Ease, and it is used for dulling pain. It is most potent, and a little bit goes a great long way. But even so, my supplies are running quite low. Why do I think it's not going to be as easy as walking south and cutting some plants, says Kalira. Oh, you are perceptive, daughter, says Dagny. The clearing is guarded, and I'm going to go look at the types of creatures here to figure out what kind of guardian this has. Okay, so I don't think it's going to be a human opponent of any sort, and I don't think it's going to be any of the firstborn things here. Animal doesn't really make sense, but a beast might, or a horror. I'm going to ask the Oracle, is it a beast or is it a horror? I think a beast is more likely, so 25 or under is a horror. Rolling high would be a beast. 15. It is a horror. We've already had a hollow. I'm going to eliminate that, and it doesn't make sense for this location anyway. Bone walkers are a potential, I think, as would be Kimra. I don't think Frostbound makes sense. Alright, it's either a Bonewalker, a Kimra, or an Iron Revenant. And I am going to ask the Oracle, is it a Bonewalker, a Kimra, or an Iron Revenant? First 40, lowest 40, would be a Bonewalker. The 40 after that would be a Kimra. And the top 20 would be an Iron Revenant. 28. Bonewalker. Possibly more than one. The clearing was once a settlement of our people, but they fell to a disease, the same disease that plagues me. They had discovered a palliative based on the flowers that grew in the spot. Unfortunately, they did not discover it in time, and almost all of them perished. I am the last survivor of that settlement myself. For many years, I tended a small patch of Knight's Ease that I brought with me, but they were killed in a hard frost this past winter. The only place I know to get more is the ruins of that settlement. Unfortunately, it is now haunted by the corpses of those who fell there
they shamble and walk. However, I believe you may be able to retrieve what I need. Do I have any other option? Kalira says. This is the price that I'm demanding, says Dagny. All right, Kalira says. And she draws her new sword, Bregi's sword. She holds it to her chest. I swear an iron vow on this iron that I won in honorable combat. I shall go to the ruined settlement. What was it called? Elenmir, says Stagny. It was called Elenmir. I swear on this iron that I won in honorable combat, I shall go to the ruined settlement of Elenmir, there to harvest knight's ease and bring it for Dagny. And we're going to roll for swearing an iron vow. And she has a 6. 3 plus 3 is 6 versus double 3s. So that is a strong hit. And I get plus 2 momentum. I'm going to call this vow Harvest Knight's Ease for the sake of brevity. How difficult is this? I think probably just dangerous. How far is it to Elenmir? Not terribly. About half a day's travel further south of here. I can give you directions, says Dagny, although there is no longer really a road. The path that once existed has been overgrown. Still, I think you should be able to find it if you look carefully. And she gives directions to the two of them. All right, says Kalira. There's no time like the present. We have our gear. We know where we're going. We'll come back with the knight's ease that you need. Very good, says Dagny. I await your return with interest. Kalira and Inari emerge from the cottage, walking a little ways further off from it, towards the south. Kalira says, nothing's ever straightforward, is it? Not for you, it seems, says Inari. I wonder, says Kalira. I think I need to try my keen ritual with this new sword. I want to have it ready to go if there are things to fight, or if our good friend Bregi decides to finish things. I want to be ready. Ugh, says Inari. Suit yourself. I'll just wait over here. And he steps a little ways away. Kalira draws her new sword. It is a tolerably decent blade. Looks serviceable. Hasn't been kept quite as sharp as she might hope, and she notes with displeasure that there is a spot of rust along the blade. She wipes at it. I'll have to polish that out later, she says. In the meantime,
She holds the sword blade to her chest and closes her eyes and hums, listening for the answering hum from any souls the sword has severed. And rolling for keen, which is heart, I believe. Yes, heart. Plus one from death touched. So rolling at plus four. Six plus four is 10 versus a two and a three. So that is a strong hit. Kalyra hums, and the answer is immediate. This sword has been used to kill and kill and kill again. There are many, many souls singing in the blade. As she finishes, it hums slightly with a faint metallic hum, and she knows that it will cut more keenly than it had before. She sheathes it carefully. And I get plus one momentum from Death Touched, because that was a hit. Momentum to plus four. All done, she says to Ainari. All right, he says. Come on, she said it was about half a day's travel. If we're lucky, we can get there, do the thing, and come back today. Yes, says Kalyra. She glances back at the hut behind them. Why did she call me daughter? She wonders. Then she turns her face to the south, and the two of them begin their journey to the lost settlement of Elenmir to harvest night's ease for the dying priestess Dagny. And that's where we're going to call session.